we are on page 582, the fourth noble truth, the truth of the way leading to the cessation of suffering. Now, the fourth noble truth is what we call the Eightfold Path. So it consists of eight factors, and these eight factors are actually the mental factors, chetasikas. So that is why the author said they have of course already been explained as to meaning in the description of the aggregates. So in the chapter on aggregates, they have already been explained, but still he will deal with them here because it's a little different here. Although all of these are chetasikas, here they belong to supramundane, so they are a little different. So briefly, when a meditator is progressing towards the penetration of the four truths, his eye of understanding with Nibbana as its object eliminates the inherent tendency to ignorance. And that is right view. So the first factor is right view, or right understanding. And right understanding means paññā. And paññā here is concomitant with the supramundane consciousness, I mean, path consciousness. So it is concomitant with path consciousness. And here, it eliminates the inherent tendency to ignorance, means the highest of the four path consciousnesses, that is the fourth path consciousness. But right view concomitant with the first, second, and third path consciousness are is also right view. Because here, the other states the highest one. So that is right view. It is right seeing as its characteristic. Its function is to reveal elements like a floodlight. It is manifested as the abolition of the darkness of ignorance. So when paññā comes, ignorance disappears. So it is the abolition of the darkness of ignorance. Then the next factor is right thinking or right thought. When he possesses such view, his directing of the mind onto Nibbana, which directing is associated with that right view. So this right thinking is associated with right view. Actually, they arise at the same time, and then they do their respective functions. So here, right thinking is concomitant with right view, and it abolishes wrong thinking, and that is right thinking. Although it is called thinking, it is actually the chetasika vitakka. Vitakka has the characteristic of directing the mind onto the object. So its characteristic is right directing of the mind onto its object. So it is important. Although it is translated as right thinking or right thought, it is not really thinking. But it is a mental factor which takes the mind to the object, or which directs the mind onto the object. Its function is to bring about absorption of the path consciousness in Nibbana as object. It is manifested as the abandoning of wrong thinking. So right thinking is manifested as abandoning of wrong thinking. And then next one is right speech. Right speech is also here associated with paññā. So when he sees and thinks thus, his abstinence from wrong speech, which abstinence is associated with that right view. abolish as bad verbal conduct or wrong verbal conduct, and that is called right speech. It has the characteristic of embracing. Its function is to abstain. It is manifested as the abandoning of wrong speech. And next is right action. So it is abstinence from killing living things, which abstinence is associated with that right view, cuts off wrong action, and that is called right action. So right action really means abstinence from killing, stealing, and sexual misconduct. It has the characteristic of originating. Its function is to abstain. It is manifested as the abandoning of wrong action. So what is missing here is killing living things, etc. So etc. is missing. So his abstinence from killing living things, etc. And etc. covers stealing and sexual misconduct. Next is right livelihood. When his right speech and right action are purified, his abstinence from wrong livelihood, which abstinence is associated with that right view, okay, cuts off scheming, etc. You can read about scheming in the first chapter. And that is called right livelihood. It has the characteristic of cleansing. Its function is to bring about the occurrence of a proper livelihood. It is manifested as the abandoning of wrong livelihood. And the next one is right effort. So it is also accompanied by right view. And when he is established on that plane of virtue called right speech, right action, and right livelihood, these three belong to the group of virtue. His energy, which is in conformity and associated with that right view, cuts off idleness, and that is called right effort. It has the characteristic of exerting. Its function is non-arousing of unprofitable things and so on. It is manifested as the abandoning of wrong effort. So when you have right effort, you do not produce unprofitable states or unwholesome states. And then right mindfulness, when he exerts himself thus, the non-forgetfulness in his mind, which is associated with that right view, shakes off wrong mindfulness, and that is called right mindfulness. Now, it is strange here, wrong, though the expression wrong mindfulness. In the ultimate sense, there is no wrong mindfulness. Mindfulness is always right or always wholesome. So there is no wrong mindfulness. So what is meant by wrong mindfulness here is wrong perception or distorted perception of things, like taking things, ugly things to be present, and taking impermanent things to be permanent, and so on. So wrong mindfulness here means unwholesome mental states associated with or headed by wrong perception. It has the characteristic of establishing. Its function is not to forget. It is manifested as the abandoning of wrong mindfulness. And then right concentration. When his mind is thus guarded by supreme mindfulness, the unification of mind, so the capital T should be a small t. The unification of mind, which is associated with that right view, abolishes wrong concentration, and that is right concentration. It has a characteristic of non-distraction. Its function is to concentrate. It is manifested as the abandoning of wrong concentration. Now, in the chapter on in the first chapter on samadhi, concentration, the characteristic and others of concentration is given. So here they are given again, but with a little difference. This is the method in the description of the way leading to the cessation of suffering. So this is the description of the eight factors of the fourth noble truth. And then, as to knowledge's function, that means as to the function of knowledge, the exposition should be understood according to the functions of knowledge. So please add those words. According to the functions of knowledge, not just according to knowledge, according to the functions of knowledge of the truth. For knowledge of the truth is twofold, namely, knowledge's idea and knowledge's penetration. Knowledge's idea really means the second-hand knowledge. Knowledge after hearing somebody speak. The Pali word is anubodha. Anubodha means after knowing. After knowing means you hear something and then you know. So it is translated as idea here. I don't know whether that is a good word for it. So knowledge as idea means second-hand knowledge. And knowledge as penetration means direct knowledge. So there are two kinds of knowledge. Here, knowledge as idea or second-hand knowledge is mundane and occurs through hearsay, etc. Or just by logical thinking, just by comparing this with that and something like that, but not through direct seeing of things. So about cessation and the path. Knowledge consisting in penetration, that is a real knowledge, which is supramundane, penetrates the four truths as its function. Actually, four truths by way of functions, by making cessation its object according as it is said. Now, actually, the knowledge consisting in penetration takes Nibbana as object. So it can take only Nibbana as object, but not the other truths. But when it takes Nibbana as object, then the second noble truth is destroyed, and the first noble truth is completely understood, and so on. So it is said that it penetrates the four noble truths, but actually what it penetrates is only the third noble truth, because mind can take only one object at a time. So when it takes Nibbana as object, it cannot take the other truths as object. But it is said to be the functions to be done to these truths are said to be accomplished at the moment of enlightenment, or at the moment of penetrating the Nibbana or the third noble truth. So it penetrates the four noble truths by way of function, by making cessation its object according as it is said, because he who sees suffering sees also the origin of suffering, sees also the cessation of suffering, sees also the way leading to the cessation of suffering, and it should be repeated thus of all four truths. So he who sees the origin of suffering sees the suffering, and so on. But its function will be made clear in the purification by knowledge and vision. So it will be made clear in that chapter 22. When this knowledge is mundane, then occurring as the overcoming of obsessions, the knowledge of suffering therein forestalls the false view of individuality. Now, the knowledge of these four noble truths, each abandons each false view. So the first, the knowledge of the suffering therein forestalls the false view of individuality. The knowledge of origin forestalls the annihilation view. The knowledge of cessation forestalls the eternity view, and the knowledge of the path forestalls the moral inefficacy of action view. That means whatever you do, there is no moral value, whether good or bad. Or alternatively, the knowledge of suffering forestalls wrong theories of fruit. That means wrong understanding of fruit or results, in other words, seeing lastingness, beauty, pleasure, and self in the aggregate, which are devoid of lastingness, beauty, pleasure, and the self. And the knowledge of origin forestalls wrong theories, again, wrong understanding of cause that occur as finding a reason where there is none, such as the war occurs owing to an overlord, a basic principle, time, nature, individual essence, etc. The knowledge of cessation forestalls such wrong theories of cessation as taking final release to be, oh, wait a minute. Now, these are the views taken by the other teachers, maybe during the time of the Buddha or during the time of the Buddha and also after the time of the Buddha. So, the war occurs owing to an overlord means something like Christianity, that God created the world and so on. You may look at the footnote. So the overlord makes the war occur, prepares it, halts it, disposes of it. So in Hinduism, there are three gods, the Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. So Brahma creates the world, and Vishnu preserves it, and Shiva is going to destroy it. So Shiva is the god of destruction. And the basic principle, that refers to the Sankhya philosophy. In Sankhya philosophy, they said there is one basic principle, and the world is created out of that principle. So when that principle comes into contact with another principle, which is called soul, purusha, then the world begins. Time is just time. And nature also, it's explained in the footnote. So the world is manifested from out of a basic principle, and it is reabsorbed in that again. That is one. It comes from Sankhya philosophy. Those who hold the theory of time say, time is that creates beings, disposes of this generation. Time watches over those who sleep. According to my understanding, it should mean, time wakes up those who are asleep. To outstrip time is hard indeed. Those who hold the theory of nature, Sabhava, individual essence, say, the world appears and disappears just because of its nature, individual essence. Like the sharp nature of thorns, like the roundness of apples, kapitaphala. Kapitaphala really does not mean apples. Because kapitaphala has a hard shell. I don't see those fruits here in the West. But in our countries, they are very common. So they have hard shells and small seeds inside, and it's very sour. And when we were young, we play with those fruits, the hitting the fruits of other person, and the boy whose fruit crack loses it. So you hold the fruit here, and then other boy hits it. Then like the variedness of wild bees, birds, snakes, and so on. So this, if it means only for the outside world, then Buddhism may be the same as this. But maybe it takes not only the outside world, but also the living beings. That is why it is put here as wrong views. And the word etc. refers to those who preach fatalism and say the occurrence of the world is due to atoms. All is due to causes affected in the past. The world is determined. And that is fatalism. Like drilled gems threaded on an unbroken string. There is no doing by a man. And to those who preach chance, it is by chance that they occur, by chance as well that they do not. Pleasure and pain are due to chance. This generation lives by chance, and to those who preach liberation by chance. So there are many views about the origin of the world and how the world comes to be, and also how there can be release from the world.
Excuse me. Are you saying that the theory of nature, Sabhava. I guess in Sanskrit it's
Sabhava. It's saying the same word, Sabhava.
And it's said to be wrong view, wrong understanding?
It's taken to be wrong here, yes. Because it doesn't admit of karma as the cause of living beings.
Because it says living beings have their own causation within themselves.
That's right. Yeah, the karma as their cause.
And when you say karma, how do you explain karma?
Karma is the actually karma means the mental volition. When you do something good or bad, there is a mental factor which is called volition, and that volition has the potential to give results in the future. It disappears, but it leaves something like a potential to give results in the continuation of that being.
So you're not saying the karma of apples?
No.
Not the karma of each phenomenal event?
No. We do not say that the inanimate things have karma. Karma is for living beings only. So there are theories, and such wrong theories of cessation as taking final release to be in the immaterial world. So some take that if you reach the highest material world, Arupa Vajra, the highest Arupa Vajra world, then you find release there. Or in the world apex, that means not a shrine actually, that the Pali word is Tubiga. Tubiga means just something which is what do you call? Which is something like the protuberance. So world apex means actually the highest of the Rupa Vajra Brahma world. So when you reach that stage, then that is the end of it. And the path knowledge, full stop, strong theories of means that occur by taking to be the way of purification, what is not the way of purification, and consists in devotion to indulgence in the pleasures of sense desire and in self-mortification. So the fourth noble truth is a middle way. So it does not approach, or it does not take the two extremes. One is indulgence in the pleasures, sensual pleasures, and the other is self-mortification. Hence, this is said. Now, we have to change this a little. As long as a man is vague about the world, about its origin, about its ceasing, about the means that lead to its cessation, so long he cannot recognize the truth. But the real meaning of the verse is the other way around. As long as a man cannot recognize the truth, so long is he vague about the world, that means confused about the world, about its origin, cessation, and way to the cessation. Then, as the division of content, all states excepting craving and states free from kankas are included in the truth of suffering. So in the truth of suffering, everything is included except craving and states free from kankas, that means supramundane states. The 36 modes of behavior of craving, that means just 36 kinds of craving. And they are explained in the footnote. First, there are sense desire, and craving for sense desire, craving for becoming, and craving for non-becoming, three. And these three are multiplied by the 12 bases, internal bases, six internal bases and six external bases. So they become 36 are included in the truth of origin. So the truth of origin means craving. So craving may be only 3 or 18 or 36 or 108. So whatever it may be, if it is craving, it is included in the truth of origin. The truth of cessation is unmixed. So it is only one, Nibbana. As regards the truth of the path, the heading of right view includes the fourth road to power, consisting in inquiry, the understanding faculty, the understanding power, and the investigation of state's enlightenment factor. Now, in order to understand this, you have to understand the 37 constituents of enlightenment, bodhyangas. So there are 37 constituents of enlightenment. They are called factors of enlightenment. But here, not bodhyanga, bodhibhakya. And among them there is bodhyanga. So they are called bodhibhakya, constituents of, actually members of enlightenment. And they are 37.
Wings of enlightenment, sometimes it's said.
Wings?
Wings, 37 wings of
enlightenment. Maybe it's just figuratively speaking. So you have to understand those. Please read chapter 7 of the manual of Abhidhamma. They are mentioned there. Four foundations of mindfulness, four right efforts, and four roads to power, and then five faculties, five powers, seven factors of enlightenment, and eight factors of path, right? So these are 37. So this paragraph explains this according to these 37 constituents of enlightenment. So before you understand it, you have to be familiar with these 37 factors of constituents of enlightenment. So down to paragraph, there is one expression: consciousness concentration. What is that? Consciousness concentration. Do you see the words? Consciousness concentration.
Halfway down.
Halfway down the page. Consciousness concentration really means the Iddhipara, road to power, as consciousness. So there are four roads to power, right? What are the four? Do you remember? Newt? What are the four? Iddhipara, means of accomplishment. Yeah, chanda, viriya, citta, and vimansa. So here, consciousness concentration means citta as adipada, citta as road to power. And then concentration faculty and so on. And then simile, as to simile. It's not difficult to understand, but it's very good. See, the first truth, suffering, should be regarded as a burden. Then the second truth as taking up of the burden. The third truth as putting down the burden. And the fourth truth as means to putting down the burden, and so on. And then the first truth is like a disease. That is my pet example. Like a disease. And the second is like the cause of disease. And the third is like the cure of disease. And the fourth is like a medicine. Or the truth of suffering is like a famine, and the second truth is like a drought, the third like plenty, and the food like timely rain. And furthermore, and so on. Now, next paragraph. As to the tetrad, R should be T. And it is just suffering, you know. There is suffering, that is not noble truth. And there is noble truth, that is not suffering. And there is something that is both noble suffering and noble truth, and that is something that is neither suffering nor noble truth. So, this is just shuffling the contents of the noble truth. First, you must understand what consists of of what the first noble truth consists, the second noble truth consists, and so on. And then you try to understand that there is something which is only noble truth but not suffering, and which is suffering but not noble truth, and so on. So the first one here, those states associated with the path and the fruits of asceticism, that means arahata, are suffering since they are suffering due to formations. Now, when magga arises, I mean the path consciousness arises, there is path consciousness and then mental factors, right? Among the mental factors, there are 8 factors, and they are path, right? Then the others are called states associated with the path. So states associated with the path really means path consciousness and other mental factors, except the 8 factors of path. They are suffering since they are due to formations. Since they are formations, they are called suffering. But they are not included in the truth of suffering. Still, they are not the noble truth of suffering. If you read the last portion of the 7th chapter of Manual of Abhidhamma, you will understand that. There are some states which do not belong to any of the 4 noble truths, strictly speaking. And the states associated with the path, and the states associated with the fruit of asceticism, that means the fruit of the fruition consciousness. So they are called suffering because they have a beginning and an end, because they are impermanent. That is why they are called suffering. But they are not included in the noble truth of suffering. Something like that. Cessation is a noble truth, but it is not suffering. It is easy. The other 2 noble truths, that means the 2nd and the 4th, can be suffering because they are impermanent, but they are not so in the real sense of that for the full understanding of which the life of purity is lived under the Blessed One. That means for the full understanding of which means for the full understanding of the noble truth. The first noble truth. So that is why they are suffering, but they are not they are not so in the real sense of that for the full understanding of which the life of purity is lived under the Blessed One. And then the 5 aggregates as objects of clinging, except craving, are in all aspects both suffering and noble truth. So all five aggregates except clinging or except lobha. Both suffering and noble truth. And the states associated with the path and the fruits of asceticism are neither suffering in the real sense of that for the full understanding of which the life of purity is lived under the Blessed One, that means the noble truth, nor are they noble truth. Origin, etc., should also be construed in the corresponding way. So you can say noble truth and not origin, origin and not noble truth, and so on. And then as to void, single fold, and so on. So the four noble truths are void. In the ultimate sense, all the truths should be understood as void because of the absence of any experiencer, any doer, anyone who is extinguished, and any goer. Hence this is said, for there is suffering but none who suffers. And this is a very popular saying quoted by many authors. There is suffering but none who suffers. There is only doing but no doer. And there is only extinction and not the person who is extinguished, or not the person who experiences the extinction. There is the path but there is no goer, just the path. Or alternatively, so void of lastingness and beauty, pleasure, self, is the first pair. First pair means the first noble truth and the second noble truth. They are void of lastingness, void of beauty, void of pleasure, void of self. And void of self, the deathless state, the third noble truth is void of self. And void of lastingness, of pleasure, and of self is the path too. The fourth path, the fourth truth is void of lastingness, void of pleasure, and void of self, but not void of beauty, because they are wholesome. For such is voidness in these four. So this is as according to void. Or there are void of three are void of cessation, and cessation is void of other three. That here void means different from. So the three are different from cessation, from the third. The first, second, and fourth are different from the third, and the third is different from the other three, something like that. Or the cause is void of the result, because of the absence of suffering in the origin and the cessation in the path. The cause is not gravid with its fruit, like the primordial essence. Here also, again, reference is to Samkhya philosophy. In Samkhya philosophy, they say that the fruit is inherent in the cause. According to Buddhist philosophy, cause and effect are two separate things. Cause is one thing, and the effect is another thing. Cause originates fruit, but cause is not fruit, and fruit is not cause. They are two separate things. But in this philosophy, Samkhya philosophy, they said that the fruit is already inherent in the cause, only it is not manifest. So when you make a pot out of clay, actually the pot is in the clay. If there is no pot in the clay, you cannot make a pot with clay, something like that. So the pot is existent in the clay in an unmanifested form. And then you pick up the clay and you make it a pot. So it becomes a pot. So their view is that the result is already contained in the cause, in an unmanifest form. So the cause is not gravid with its fruit, like the primordial essence of those who assert the existence of primordial essence. So in Sanskrit it is called asatkaryavada. asatkarya. A means not. Sat means existing. I mean, satkarya vada. Sat means existing, karya means fruit. So fruit existing in the cause. There is another philosophy. So the fruit of a cause does not have its cause inherent in it, like the two atoms, etc., of those who assert inherence. It refers to the Vaisheshika philosophy. In that philosophy, they say more or less the same thing. The cause is already, the result is already in the causes. The cloth is already in the threads, they say, because without threads there can be no cloth. If you take the threads one by one, then there is no cloth. So that means that cloth and the threads are related. Their relation is by inherence. Also, they explain the beginning of the world as combining of two atoms, three atoms, and so on. So when two atoms combine, and it becomes a dyad, say two atoms. But they say that two atoms are inherent in each one of the atoms. Because when they come together, they become two. So two does not exist without one and one put together. So two must be in one also. So it is called the inherence, maybe the doctrine of inherence or something like that. And they are rejected here. So, and the result is void of the cause owing to the absence of inherence of the origin and suffering and of the path and cessation. The fruit of a cause does not have its cause inherent in it, like the two atoms, etc., of those who assert inherence, and so on. Now, and then as to single fold and so on. On page 588, suffering is of one kind as the state of occurrence. So, as a state of occurrence, it is only one. But it is of two kinds as mentality, materiality, nama and rupa. It is of three kinds as divided into rebirth process, becoming in the sense sphere, fine material sphere, and immaterial sphere, and so on. And then origin is of one kind as making occur. That means producing something. It is of two kinds as associated and not associated with false view. It is of three kinds as craving for sense desire, craving for becoming, and craving for non-becoming. We'll find these three kinds of craving later. It is of four kinds as abandonable by the four paths. It is of five kinds classed as delight and materiality, and so on. And it is of six kinds classed as the six groups of craving. Also, cessation is of one kind, being the unformed or unconditioned element. But indirectly, it is of two kinds. You already know the two kinds of nirvana, right? Nirvana experienced during the life of the arahant, and then nirvana at his death. So the first is called nirvana with the aggregates remaining, and the second is called nirvana with the aggregates not remaining. Because when a person becomes an arahant, he eradicates mental defilements, but he still has his body and his mind, which are the result of his past karma. So he still has this remainder of his aggregates. So with the remainder of the aggregate, he experiences nibbana. So the nibbana experienced by an arahant before his death is called nirvana with the aggregates remaining. And at death, there is a cessation. And so, when an arahant dies, his remaining aggregates also disappear. So that nirvana is called nirvana without the remaining aggregates. So there are two kinds of nirvana. And also the path is of one kind as what should be developed. It is of two kinds classed according to serenity and insight. Now it is important here, samatha and vipassana. The path can be classed as serenity, as samatha and vipassana. So when it is samatha, it may mean mundane path. And insight also is mundane path actually. Or according to seeing and developing. Now, here seeing and developing has a special meaning. Seeing really means the first path, and developing means the other three paths. They are mentioned in the Abhidhamma.